Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you back here with us on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Right now, we're going to take a look at this question, what this presidential election is unleashing in America. I think in ways that we've seen growing over the last 15 years, especially the last 8 years, especially something that may harken back to other eras in terms of some of the stuff that's so blatant in our atmosphere. Many are seeing a real divide over two Americas here, maybe more than two Americas. Our vision of who we are, how race plays into this in a huge way, as does class and the strange kind of relationship between race and class that is really a dialectic relationship between race and class that plays out in this country. We are going to kind of wrestle with all that because it's key to what happens to us here now and post-November. We're here with Bill Fletcher. Bill Fletcher Jr. is a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies. He's on the editorial board of blackcommentator.com, co-author of The Indispensable Ally, Black Workers, and the Formation of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, 1934-1941, and Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Towards Social Justice. Bill, good to have you back with us.
Always good to be on the program.
Linda McAllister joins us, Republican strategist, former congressional candidate, host of Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel, and Get Right with Lenny McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA in Pittsburgh. Lenny, good to have you back as usual, as always.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
And shortly, John Nichols will be joining us, who is the national affairs correspondent for Nation magazine and co-author of People Get Ready, the fight for fighting against a jobless economy and a citizen's democracy out this month. And all of you, please join us at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. But do call in with your thoughts at 410-319-8888. But despite the politics, Bill Fletcher, of watching some people in the Republican Party scramble now to try to figure out what to do with the surge of Donald Trump, getting underneath of all this and the complexity of some of the polls and studies that have come out about who's voting for Trump and why, but even more importantly, what the attitudes that are broader than that about this. I mean, I wonder what you think this is unleashed and why it unleashed it.
You know, Mark, I think it's really important in moments like this to examine U.S. history and understand that what we're looking at, this cancer that has emerged, or in some ways I often refer to it as the herpes of the U.S. political system. It happens, it surfaces at different times when the overall system is in crisis. When we are, for example, experiencing dramatic economic changes for the better or for the worse. When we are watching various demographic changes unfold, etc. This herpes in the U.S. system emerges, and it's this right-wing populism, this mood of hatred and revenge that surfaces. And what we're looking at is, in this moment, certainly the economic crisis, the decline in the standard of living for the average worker. There are conditions that are facing whites that they never anticipated. They always assumed it might happen to people of color, but not to them. And so Trump speaks to that, as does Cruz. And they provide irrationalist answers that touch a nerve. And I think that's what we have to deeply appreciate. And that's why it remains very dangerous. But it's also to be expected, because welcome to the United States.
Lenny, I'm glad you're with us here as somebody who's a kind of a thoughtful man inside the Republican Party. What's your analysis of that?
That it's revisionist history. I mean, 60 years ago, the conservatives were the people defending the Constitution and saying that African Americans should be incorporated, and the radicals were the people on the other side of the aisle that were reacting to social norms and changing times and being violent there. And that happened for 100 years. But it wasn't from the right, per se. I mean, to sit there and say that we still have an issue with racism in America and classism in America and sexism in America is appropriate. To say this has always come from the right wing and to kind of just kind of lay it at the feet of two candidates or four candidates over the course of the last 10 years is is extremely inappropriate and inaccurate. Now, I will say this, and I've said it previously, the election of Barack Obama in 2008 led to us finding out exactly how far we have come when it comes to racism in America, because no sooner than we got done patting ourselves on the back saying, hey, we elected an African-American to the White House, then we saw all the racist signs and people going to rallies and forums with their guns saying, we're just going to let him know who's boss, and all this other ridiculous just behavior that we've seen now for almost 10 years. So this is less about politics. Politics is a construct. It is a, it's not even a construct. It's a tool that people use to basically enact this fear that has been here since they were afraid of Chinese taking railroad jobs, and they were afraid of Irish and Italians taking factory jobs. And they, of course, they've been afraid of African Americans since we've been, you know, classified as citizens and not just slaves or also, you know, living residents among us, if you will, quote unquote, us in the United States. This is something that is been in the fabric of America that we haven't quite figured out. It's just we are now changing who the others are. The others are now from Central and South America. The others are now from the Middle East. And, of course, the others are still, you know, unfortunately, African-Americans that are not seen as being full-fledged Americans.
So, Bill, let me jump back to you here. And folks, we're going to get these calls coming in, 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts. Let's go – just something that Lenny said, and it's a little controversial. And I know that you have a different view, and I'm going to get into it for a moment, which has to do with our history.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny, I know you just described it as the one time conservatives were at the forefront of the fight for racial justice, but Republicans were. But it was a different Republican from my reading of history, and Lenny, I'll let you come back in a minute, but Bill, let me let you get into that.
Oh, yeah, no, it's completely a different view of history. The Republicans from, you know, 1863 to 1877 were the party that was championing Reconstruction and the abolition of a racialist state in the South. That's true. After 1877, history takes a very different course. And so the conservatives, I would never argue, have been great defenders of the Constitution, except in insofar as it defended the status quo, property, and traditional racial relations. My point was that if you look throughout U.S. history, one of the things that you see is the periodic rise of rabid conservative slash right-wing populist movements, whether connected with Andrew Jackson in the 1830s, the rise of the KKK and other white terrorist groups in the 1860s and 1870s on, the split in the populist movement in the 1890s, and the alliance of some segments of the populist movement with white supremacists, whether you look at Father Coughlin in the 1930s, et cetera, that this irrationalist, violent movement is something that recurs in periods of crisis, and it appeals to the fears in a segment of the white population that desperately is concerned about the shift, any shift that moves away from what in their minds should be a white republic. And that's one of the things that people don't really want to talk about, but that's precisely what Cruz and Trump are talking about. When they're talking about take back America, what are they talking about? They're talking about a return to the era of Donna Reed. And I don't remember any of us on the Donna Reed show.
So I mean, so there is a complex history we have here, and I think that there's one of the things happening here that's going on at the moment is this kind of strange intersection of race and class that's happening once again in America. Robin DiAngelo, in a 2011 paper, she's a professor at Westfield State University, coined this term called white fragility. And I have some issues with her kind of all of her overview with this. What she was talking about here, that we're at a moment of real racial stress because of the downturn of what's happened to so many working class people in this country who are not of color. When you have situations where right now the white working class Americans are dying from suicide at a higher rate and alcohol abuse and drugs than almost any other group in the country, save maybe Native Americans. They are seven times the rate of their better educated peers and others with drug abuse. And there's all kinds of things that are happening in this kind of spectrum that I think that are really affecting people. And people are all of a sudden been knocked down so far. People spend a lifetime being able to say, I'm better than, but better than is not there, so it has to be their fault that we're being dragged down. And I think there's a very subtle dynamic, but one that seems to be blossoming into a political movement that has some dangerous undertones at the very least. Lenny?
It does. And unfortunately, we've had politicians over the course of history that have tapped into that. George Wallace, Ross Barnett, I mean, others, they tap into that. That's how they get elected. That's how they pass laws. And those are just the more famous ones. Those are the ones that actually ran for president and governor, respectively, one as a governor, ran for the presidency. But we fail to forget, or we fail to remember, that there are plenty of state representatives, state senators, mayors, councilmen, tax collectors, et cetera, that ran on the same platforms, that created a structure that was in place that justified this for years. And again, this has less to do, and I know that others may try to make this out to be a partisan thing, but it has less to do with the politics involved than it does with how you use the politics. Even the reference to Andrew Jackson, went after the social constructs of banking. That was considered radical. That was considered liberal to do in the 1820s and 30s. So this is not something that is brand new or just exclusive to one side of the aisle. This is something that is a unique, unfortunate characteristic of America that we have to address. How do we move our country forward as one big team and allow us to use all of the differences that we have individually to make it a combined strength nationally? And that's where leadership comes into play. And when you sit at opportunities of time where people are more inclined to be populist than they are to be leaders, you have the chaos that we're seeing. You see the divisiveness that we're seeing. You see the back and forth and the anxiety that you see. And, of course, if you have somebody playing off that anxiety, it only builds the fire.
Mark, if I may.
Please, go jump in.
I agree. I don't think that this is a partisan issue as such. I mean, I would agree with that. You can look at the transformation of the Democratic Party from a openly white supremacist party to a much more complicated party, or the transformation of the Republicans. I mean, as Mark was saying, you know, there is no place for a Nelson Rockefeller in today's Republican Party, or a Jacob Javits, or for that matter, Colin Powell. I mean, it's become a hard right-wing party. That's a party for white people. I mean, they're pretty clear about that. So I think that she's right, that it's not simply a partisan issue. But I think that what we have to understand is that, to go to an earlier point, capitalism, the way that capitalism is playing out, is crushing millions of white workers. It is absolutely, there's no question about it. Their lives are evaporating. And they have every right to be angry. The problem is they look at this situation through the prism of race. In other words, as opposed to identifying the problem as it's the system, right, it becomes it's Obama. It becomes it's Muslims. It becomes it's Latinos, right? So it becomes there's an ethnic racial prism and often a gender prism of looking at the problem rather than looking at the way that the system is operating. And I think that's one of the challenges for anyone that considers themselves a progressive, that they have to help folks put on the glasses so that they understand what exactly is playing out right before their eyes and not become mystified by this.
Let me open the phones here and give our listeners' thoughts. There are a lot of questions I have for the two of you, and we may be joined shortly by George Zornick, I think, or John Nichols. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Robert in Baltimore. You're on the air. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks, Mark, and esteemed guest. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We got you.
I want to start my first point by saying this. I think that the whole issue of race versus class for the most part, doesn't really have a whole lot of validation when referred to or directed towards African American. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, as a guy myself, you know, I have an advanced degree, I have a master's degree and so forth. But even still with that, you know, I feel like a lot of times, despite that, I'm still viewed and looked upon as being lower than or lesser than. And it's not any direct, reflection of me personally, how I carry myself. That's pretty much just the visage that I carry, my physicality, the whole nine. So I think this whole issue of race versus class, particularly when it's applied to African Americans, I think if anything, that's been more destructive to African Americans. The reason why I say that is because a lot of times, you know, some African Americans who do hold advanced degrees, sometimes that they will, if not careful, they will fall into that trap of kind of, you know, cognitively distancing themselves away from their lesser educated brother. So I think that when it comes to race and class, we as African Americans need to be really careful with that, because despite whatever degrees, however much money we may make, we need to understand that mainstream America will always view us as being the lowest person on the totem pole, so to speak. One more thing I want to say before I finish off, Mark, if I may. Mm-hmm. Is that you know, when it comes to race and politics, you know, Reagan, I think he was a hugely transformational figure as far as how politics were carried on. I know there were guys way before him, George Wallace and so on, but he was the one who really used the full forces of the media when he talked about things like the welfare queen and, of course, George Bush, the Willie Horton issue. So I think a lot of those things kind of played up a lot of this racial animus that people have always felt towards African Americans. And I think that, one of your guests said that the Republican Party right now is a party of whites. I would have to agree. I would also say that the Republican Party, from what I understand, is slowly morphing into some type of they're going beyond a neocon. We're almost sort of we're a few steps away from becoming American Nazis. That's all I
want to
say.
Thank you, Robert. You said a bunch of things. Well, let me get to the American Nazi and fascist part in a moment, because I think that's a word that's been thrown around a lot lately that has been used in American politics in decades in a serious way. So I'm going to come back to that thought. But let me talk about the complexities here from a class and race. And let me start with Bill McGover, Lenny, and Lisa, you're the next caller up at 410-319-8888. I mean, I think this is – someone said at a forum that I did the other night that if every black and Latino American was left America, was not in this country, you'd still have deep class issues, and there still would be poverty and kind of class oppression in this country, and that a conversation ensued around that, and I think there's some merit in that kind of, even though a fanciful statement that is around that idea. But we are a nation built on not just a capitalism class, but on race and the idea that slavery itself, the destruction of Native people. We talked about Andrew Jackson wiping out Native American populations, opening the South to greater parts to enslaving Africans to build the economy that built the capitalist economy. And it's a complex question, I think, Bill, about the intersection here of race and class. It's hard for people to parse it out.
I think it is, and I think where I would disagree with the caller is that the issue of race and class is not just about perception. It's about the experience that we have in the United States. This is a capitalist country. There are very deep class issues that affect everybody, working people, whether they are Latino, white, etc. But there are these specific race issues. And yes, I would say if all the people of color vaporize tomorrow, this country would probably fall apart because there would be no one to blame. I mean, there would be no one to blame anymore. You couldn't look around and say, oh, it's the blacks. I mean, the class divide would become so obvious. But as long as whites will wake up in the morning and think that if they put on a certain uniform, metaphorically, they will be the same as the Koch brothers, then we have trouble. Because then there's this problem of which side do they see themselves on? So I think that when we're talking about class within Black America, certainly, it's a very real thing. I mean, there's an incredible class divide within Black America in terms of wealth and ownership, et cetera, but also a growing, you know, unfortunately, growing number of people that seem to think that the future of Black America rests in some sort of illusion of the free market. So there are these issues that we absolutely have to put on the table. And we can't just assume that the problems facing Black America are just racial.
And Lenny, you know, you can jump in on that as well. I do want to explore this question of fascism and the use of fascism in the latest poll that came out. That I think that is really interesting here, that this latest HuffPost YouGov poll showed a lot of things, but I'm going to get into some of the other stuff because I think it speaks to the complexity of it all, that almost half of Americans think that Donald Trump's campaign has fascist overtones. Only 30% of the people disagree, and most of those are supporting Donald Trump. 45% of the independents say Trump's campaign has echoes of fascism, and even 28% of Republicans do. So it may be a minority in some ways, even inside the Republican Party, but it's emblematic of something deeper, and it's a powerful force. And people are seeing it in America for the first time. I have not heard mainstream media use the word fascist in decades, not in my lifetime.
Well, you're right. But at the same time, we live in times where we live in strange times. We live where thought leaders are people that have the most Twitter followers, and people that are seen as being strong are the people that are the loudest. And that's part of what's going on. And I think what we forget sometimes is we're still dealing with human beings. You know, if all the people of color disappeared from America, somebody would still be blamed. The poor people would be blamed for the dirt on the ground because they're poor. And it wouldn't matter if they were poor Italian-Americans, Irish-Americans, German-Americans, Polish-Americans. I mean, you know, I understand the issue of racism in America. Trust me. And I have been somebody that's been an advocate for equality for years and years on a public scale, and I've taken some pretty personal hits for being so vocal. Yet at the same time, we have to also take in consideration the nature of humanity, which is there's going to be a scapegoat somewhere. It's easier to blame than it is to work together when you have issues of crisis and obstacles in the way. Moving forward, we have to really look at how do we deal with it. We're a smaller world. How do we deal with working together, understanding our differences, still being Americans together? And that's where part of the rub is, because there's still a huge segment of Americans that don't feel like full-fledged Americans, whether it's, you know, women because they don't get the same pay in America, or it's African Americans because they don't get the same opportunities despite the same skill sets or the same levels of sacrifice. Whatever the case may be, this is where it goes back to leadership. This is where it goes back to gravitating towards something that looks like fascism versus sticking to democracy even when it's uncomfortable. And right now people want comfort because they're anxious. They're scared. They're scared for their jobs. They're scared for their homes. They're scared for their future, so they're willing to gravitate to something that's going to make them feel safe, even in that moment. And that's exactly what Mussolini did. That's exactly what Hitler did. That's what even you look at people that rose up at the beginning of the 20th century in Russia against the Tsar. It's the same premise, unfortunately. Now, do I think that it'll be a dictator in America? No, I don't think that Donald Trump, should he get elected, is going to change the Constitution and be president for 30 years. But with that said, there's a tone that can be projected. You think about a President Trump, for example, that might end up being in charge when there is a terrorism attack like we're seeing in Brussels today. How would that individual respond? Maybe we don't think President Obama's response is appropriate enough, but there's a transverse to that, too. There could be saber-rattling playing with North Korea with nuclear weapons. There could be saber-rattling playing with Iran with, we think, at the very least, chemical weapons, and possibly still working towards nuclear weapons despite the agreement that's in place. All of these things matter. And again, it goes back to how do we overcome our fear through leadership the bridge over the racism, the bridge over the classism, and deal with the other obstacles that we're facing. And right now, people, we're focusing on the Trumps of the world, not just Donald Trump, but the other ones that are running in different areas and doing different things and saying different things. And then we're looking at the real threats to our freedom, as we've seen in Belgium.
Bill, I'll be at that good break. You want to take us to break with a counterpoint there?
Yeah, I guess a couple of things real quick. One is that I think it's very important that we understand that it's not just Trump. I agree with your guest. I think that Cruz is just as dangerous. Mm. He's just more suave and actually more consistent, but he is just as dangerous. I think that your opinion poll also points out something that has been a recurring theme, that around a quarter of the country, about 25%, seems to be consistently fairly rotten politically. I mean, really dangerous, dangerously so, very reactionary. And they are attracted to the politics of a Trump and a Cruz. And the defeating that element will be very important, but it has to be play itself out on the basis of a different vision. And this is part of what I think is actually exciting in the Democratic races with Sanders versus Clinton, because Sanders actually has a very different vision of the future. And even though I'm critical of elements of what Sanders has done, in its fundamentals, it is a hopeful vision that is actually saying that the kind of hate and irrationalism that's represented by the Trumps and Cruzes must, in fact, be defeated.
I'm going to take a short break, and I really want to, folks, do join us and come back. Pardon me, come back to those calls that we lost here at 410-319-8888. Because there is a strong likelihood it will be a Trump candidacy in the coming up through August to November. Our thoughts about that and getting into what this 25 or 30% might mean, and a deeper look at who we are as a people and where that might be taking us, and is it something for us to really be concerned about? 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner as we continue looking at where this country is and why it seems to be pulling apart at the seams with Bill Fletcher, Jr., senior scholar of the Institute for Policy Studies, editorial board member of BlackCommentator.com, Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist, host of Night Talk, and Get It Right with Lenny McAllister, and you at 410-319-8888. Hold on, Rich. We're going to come to your call right away. I want to read this tweet that just came in because what I said going to break. The Kitchen Table Collective tweeted in, when I think I said Trump's campaign having fascist overtones, and the tweet was, overtones, ? Try core. So, and Lenny, I think that's probably right. And when you look at the numbers which you talked about before, where we know that about 30% of Americans still think that President Barack Obama is a Muslim, but when you look at the core of Trump's supporters, that's 62% thinking he is illegitimate, a Muslim, and born in another country. And I think that, you know, and then you look at the other part of that same poll that I was talking about earlier, that shows that a majority of people in this country still think it's the protesters' fault and not necessarily Trump's fault. Or necessarily Trump and his supporters in terms of the violence going on at his rallies. So, I mean, this kind of thing is very deep. And I think that I think John Nichols is his Jones from Nation. Welcome, John. Glad you're here, too. We'll let you jump in 2 seconds. So, Bill, just leap into that. I think that this whole idea of what the political future of America is very wrapped up in this moment and how we're defining what's going on now. Bill? Do we still have Bill?
I'm sorry. I'm here.
Okay,
I'm
man.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And you see, I guess the thing that I think we have to be careful about, and it goes back to my earlier point, is to understand that this moment is not unusual in U.S. history. I'm not saying that in order for us to feel better. What I'm saying is that there's something deeply rooted in the system itself that promotes these kind of eruptions. This whole notion that Trump continues to push in one way or another, the birther type thing, whether it's against Obama or now, you know, against against Cruz, is appealing to irrationalism. It's appealing to the nativism, the settler idea that this is a white republic. This is incredibly dangerous. And now what's happened, but this has been unleashed, not by Trump, but one only has to look back at Nixon's Southern strategy in 1968. Nixon's Southern strategy, which I always say is better called the white people's strategy. It was playing on issues of race. It used different kinds of codes. It was building off of the Wallace campaign. And we're just living the results of that, right? Which the Republican establishment has been very content to manipulate all these years. And now Frankenstein's monster is unleashed, is breaking the chains, and they don't know what to do.
John, before we jump back to Lenny.
Hold on. Mark, why do we keep making this just out to be Republicans and Democrats or just, you know, they never did this or they would never take advantage of this or anything else along these lines? It's not true. I mean, if you want to go back 50, 60 years, let's go back to Woodrow Wilson. He was even an avowed segregationist that did not like black people at all, that rolled back a lot of the laws that were going in favor of African Americans at that time that allowed for the horrific second rise of the Ku Klux Klan. So this is, again, this is not a partisan thing. If this is an American thing, so be it. I understand that. But again, this is what transpires when you have the awful mix of economic instability, social upheaval, social progress, and the restructuring of social status in America. Who is now going to be on top? How much do I have when I'm up to on top? Because you might say white men have always been on top in America, but what they have access to all the time changes. I mean, yes, do they control the vast majority of wealth in America? Sure they do. They also no longer are the exclusive members of the President's Club. They're no longer the exclusive members of the Governor's Club. They're no longer the exclusive members of the Mayor's Club. And that was something that they could claim 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 150 years ago. So every time you see these things come into play, we have seen it on both sides of the political aisle. We have seen it across all the states of the United States, whether it was when there were 48 states or now 50 states. This is not something that's new. But the difference is, we are now dealing in a global time where we have to get it together or else we're going to continue to slip behind from an education standpoint. We'll continue to slip behind from an economic standpoint and the like.
Let me introduce John Nichols, who's just joining the conversation, national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, co-author of People Get Ready to Fight Against a Jobless Economy and Citizenless Democracy is out this month. They'll be on the show in the coming weeks about that book. John, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be with you. I'm sorry to join you late.
That's all right. You're busy on a book tour. So jump in on what you just heard before we open the phones.
Well, I think these are wise comments from both of our fellow guests. And there's simply no question that at different times in history, different political parties have become, for lack of a better term, the hosts for nativist, xenophobic, sometimes racist, sometimes incredibly dangerous and destructive politics. At this point, obviously, the Republican Party has become the host. That is not a shocking development because of a lot of patterns that have been at play within the party for a long time. But yes, of course, as their fellow guests suggest, the Democratic Party was home to, you know, some very ugly politics. At the heart of this, though, is, I think, something much deeper. And that is the failure of the United States to even begin to address a host of issues that are in play at the moment. The fact of the matter is we have not had a sufficient economic recovery from the global meltdown. We have not had a functional response to, you know, all the challenges, economic, social, political, that we've seen in play really in the last couple decades as regards to transition into a new digital age, the rapid automation of our workplaces. people are scared. They are worried about the changes that are taking place. That is on top of all the failed responses of the past. And so you're going to see a lot of playouts, very volatile playouts politically, some on the left, some on the right, some seeking to build broad coalitions, the politics of solidarity. I think you see some of that with Bernie Sanders, some really desperately seeking to divide and to, you know, go to some of the worst possible places. I think you see that with Trump, and obviously with the equally ugly, and I'm glad that people are bringing nuance into this, because they simply talk about Trump when you don't talk about Ted Cruz. It's absurd. Cruz is, you know, every bit as out there. And so the best way to recognize kind of where we're at is to step back, understand the economic, social, political trends that are in play at this moment, and to recognize that the campaign that we are seeing extends as much from that as from individuals and from political parties.
I'm going to open the phones here. And on the way there, just, it was such a fascinating quote I heard the other day from, I'm not remembering her first name, but the granddaughter, great-granddaughter of Herbert Hoover, who is one of the leaders of the Young Republicans, who said that Cruz or Trump, we're going to lose this election and we have to rebuild. And I think she had a point. Margaret Hoover, that was her name. She's the great-granddaughter she's at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. So that was, I found that kind of an interesting comment that she made on television the other night. 410-319-8888. Rich, you're on the air and welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I continue to wake up every day and shake my head and wonder if this is just a dream. But again, I think, what Trump seems to have gotten himself wrapped around is someone with absolutely no government experience, no military background, is able to canvass a large population of America and rally around some, type of cause with absolutely no specifics. I don't remember in my lifetime anyone being able to do that. Now, again, I don't know if it says as much about him as it says about the American population just feeling so, I guess, fed up with the powers that be, and whether it's on the Democratic side or the Republican side, I don't think it much matters. So again, I'm still incredulous that he's able to garner so much support with just empty basis for factual background.
I guess I'm not as shocked. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Just go around the room, and John, you just joined us. Go to the John, Lenny, and Bill to jump in on this. But there was I'm old enough to remember Lee Atwater and Ronald Reagan, and old enough to remember Ehrlichman and Nixon, who were very clear about, even as has come out later, about their attitudes towards race and class in America and who they were going after and why.
I'll jump in and agree with you there. I respect our caller, and I love that there are people who scratch their head about this. That's where we want our society to be. We want people to be shocked and completely at odds with, ill at ease with a moment like this. However, if we begin to look a little bit at history, what we're going to find is that in moments when there is great change, when we are experiencing economic, social, political change, and that is where we are at right now. There's simply no doubt of that. In such moments, we almost always see folks go to some very ugly, very, very dangerous places politically. Sometimes it is a reaction against progress. I certainly think that's what you saw with the Southern strategy, what Nixon and others were doing in the 1960s. Remember, Nixon had actually been reasonably good on civil rights in the late 50s and early 60s. And so that was just a purely stark political response, trying to get those Southern voters to shift from a racist, segregationist Democratic Party history over into the Republican Party. At other times, though, I think you just see sort of a desperate response. Remember, what's happening with Trump right now goes back way further to nativist, xenophobic, blaming of the other, blaming of the immigrant stuff that that is real hardwired into American politics. And what I would suggest to you is this always happens when we have a failure of leadership on the part of people who, frankly, should be better, you know, who should be, you know, upfront explaining things. And I would suggest to you that the Democratic Party, which has become a much more inclusive party and a more progressive party, at least on some of these issues, has done a poor, poor job of, you know, talking about the economic, social, political changes that are taking place right now. It's much too stilted in its language. It's much too soft in its response. And also, I would suggest, perhaps the most important thing is that you need leaders who sort of explain your way through the changes that are taking place, much as Roosevelt did in the 1930s. And we're just not seeing that at the level we should right now. And so that creates a void that someone like a Trump especially would fill.
Lenny McAllister, then we'll jump into Bill Fletcher. Lenny?
Well, I think that one of the things that we need to look at is the fact that we don't have people leading in that regard, taking the opportunity to really talk about the issues. It's a lot easier to talk in sound bites, and we see this on both sides of the aisle on a regular basis. We see this with the 24/7 news cycle where people are not as inclined to be detailed with what needs to transpire to move people. We've seen people be very, very, very complacent with where they choose to be, and I'm sorry, it keeps going off. I just think when we're looking at this, we're not talking about the inequality that people are afraid of. So we allow them to go to their base fears. Their base fears go through things that they can see, boogeymen that they can make up, and people that can articulate their fears well and keep them scared. And, you know, again, that's what we're, I keep going back to this. I mean, you know, everybody focuses on Trump, but we don't focus on what we can have, which is a true sense of leadership. And that's what we need right now. And if you look at the presidential field, how many people inspire folks right now? That was the whole thing about Obama. Obama beat the establishment by being inspiring. Now people are trying to beat the establishment by yelling. Who inspires us to be better than what we should be? And then start putting those solutions into place so that we can overcome everything from the racism to sexism to classism. We're just not doing that. We're talking about those things in a tangible way any longer. In a way where we're working with people, not just talking at people.
Bill Fletcher, sorry.
No, that's okay. I think we have to understand with the Democratic Party, the Democratic establishment has no interest in change. I mean, they're not interested in changing their ways. I mean, this, at the top of these both of these parties, you have very vested interests in the status quo. That's what makes the Sanders campaign, among other things, very, very important, because there needs to be a massive shakeup. What's happening in the Republicans is a different kind of shakeup where they, as I said before, the establishment is paying the price for having created a monster in the first place and then frustrating the monster. You see, that's the thing. It's both creating the monster and frustrating that monster, and now it has been unleashed. With the Democratic Party, the only future that it has is through some sort of very thoroughgoing transformation into a very different kind of party. And within the establishment, they're afraid of that. They are desperately afraid of that. And my concern certainly is that you'll have people, as in 1972, that would rather a progressive not win than win and have, as a result, have a transformation of the party. And so I think we have to, you know, it's going to be very important for those of us on the ground to be involved in a transformational movement.
And that, we're going to spend an entire show talking about that shortly.
Then I want to come back. I'll save the rest of what I was going to say for that show, Mark.
Let me open the phones here. I hope you have time here to get into Trump. I think Cruz, in many ways, for many people, no matter who they are in this nation politically, is more dangerous than Trump because he's a real ideologue. But let me get to the phones here. I hope I see your Twitter handle right here. I think it's Twitod, T-W-I-T-O-D. Said, I'm all for redefining politics. What do you call politicians that are stooges for corporate billionaires? Limparmists? 410-319-8888. Very good. Ken, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Ken.
I spent a lot of time in the library, doing documentaries and watching and stuff like that. But, guess what I found out? That Donald Trump is no different than Adolf Hitler. Listen to me now. And some people are going to be mad, but listen. He started out telling the German people all the things they wanted to hear about the Jews. He took a race of people who were already mad at a race of people, and he played on this thing. And that's pretty much what Donald Trump is doing now. But let me ask you this, Americans. Do you want a man sitting in the president's seat and your children, you might be dead and gone, and your children are here to contend with this man? Do you want that man to be responsible for your life, pushing the button without thinking about what he's doing? So think about that. Do your research. He is just like Adolf Hitler. He's using the same tactics, propaganda.
So let's talk a bit about that. We did touch a little bit of this in the beginning of the show, but we can touch on it again now. John, it's the media has really focused on Trump. You've written about that just recently. And not on Cruz. And, when you look at the – I heard what you were saying. There can be apt comparisons made to the fascist sloganeering that was done in the 30s, 40s that is very similar to what Donald Trump is doing today. I think that's without a doubt. But then you can look also at Mr. Cruz, Senator Cruz he's running. And in some ways, he's much more clear about his ideology.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt anyone, I'm fascinated by the desperation of the Republican elite at this point, because every candidate that they wanted to put up failed. And so now many of them are rallying around Ted Cruz, and they're saying, well, this is our last alternative to Donald Trump. But of course, on many issues, Ted Cruz is as extreme or more extreme than Donald Trump. So you realize that the rallying around Cruz is not about ideology, it's not about points of principle, or certainly the good of the country. It is because they feel that Cruz is a little bit more in their camp, a little bit more responsive, particularly to a lot of their economic self-interest. We're talking about corporate types, some of the billionaires who've been so definitional in the party. But no one who's not purely self-interested, like a Paul Ryan, for instance, should begin to imagine that Ted Cruz is some sort of better player. And this gets to the heart of the crisis in the Republican Party. This party has, in recent decades, fostered a lie. And the lie is that somehow a group of billionaires, very, very wealthy people at the top, who've hired great consultants, know all. And that the base of the party, the many working people who are at the base of the party, should just continue to vote for redistributing wealth upwards. What Trump has come along and said is, look, the leaders have lied to you, and you shouldn't trust them. A lot of the base has responded to that. The leaders are now so desperate that they'll go to Cruz, who is also a very destructive figure, to try and stop Trump, maybe save a little bit of their turf. But we, the people, ought to step back from all of this and recognize that what's happening in the Republican Party at this point is an incredibly dangerous game. We should not fail to notice just today and what's happened in response to these horrible attacks in Brussels. What was Ted Cruz's response? Just visceral blame-laying and attacks on President Obama, almost, like, largely fact-free. Trump going, deep into, again, blame lane, scapegoating, less talking about President Obama to more to direct attacks on
refugees, immigrants, Muslims. This is bad. This is a very bad politics. And I don't expect the Republican Party at the elite level or, you know, down through its infrastructure to in any way change course here. The challenge thus rests with a media that has done a horrible job of covering this campaign, but also with political leaders on the other side. And Bill references Bernie Sanders. It's Bernie Sanders. It's Hillary Clinton. It's a lot of folks. And President Obama himself, who's actually done a really good job of talking about Islamophobia. They have to stand up in much more blunt and direct ways and challenge this. It's not partisanship. You are not talking about the good of the country.
So let me just jump in real quick. One second, please. We only have like a minute left. I apologize. I was going to go to you, Lenny, as a Republican on the panel today to kind of say what you have to say in the last minute we have. Go ahead.
I mean, we're looking at all the quote-unquote racism on the right, and Ted Cruz is just as bad as Donald Trump, which he's not. He has his flaws, but he's not as bad or has said anything near as bad as Donald Trump over the course of the last year since they've all been on the campaign trail. And we're forgetting the fact that Hillary Clinton said that black male youth needed to come to heel, that they were super predators, that under the Clintons, you had this rise of mass incarceration. Bernie Sanders has just, in regards to income inequality, he's been talking about that, but wants to do that by completely flipping the system upside down and doesn't have a way of paying for it. You know, let's not act like the Democrats are all of our friends. In fact, we have an African-American president for the third time has ignored trying to put an African-American on the Supreme Court. And when was told specifically, what are you going to do about African-American unemployment, came back with the Reagan response of a rising tide lifts all boats. If Bush, Reagan, or another Republican said that, they would have tried to get his head on a platter. Instead, Al Sharpton, my friend Ben Jealous, and others left and let that be a sufficient answer when it wasn't a sufficient answer. So let's not act like the Democrats are so much further advanced with helping African-Americans get into office or get political jobs, which Roland Martin continuously talks about, more than the Republicans.
As another radio man, you understand we're at the top of the hour.
Yes, I do.
Sorry.
I do.
So I want to thank Lenny, you for joining us as usual. Bill Fletcher, Jr., always great to have you with us. And when
thank
we get
you.
That Building the Movement show coming up within the next few weeks, you know you're on the panel.
All right.
And John Nichols, my dear friend, National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation magazine, soon to come on the show to talk about his book, People Get Ready, The Fight Against a Jobless Economy and a Citizens-Less Democracy, that he wrote with Bob McChesney. Good to have you on, and we'll have you back very soon.
Honored.
God bless you all.
Three of you.
Take care, everybody. And good to have all of you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show, calling in and making this show what it is. Always great to have your thoughts here on the airwaves. I'll leave you with this last tweet by Meg, who tweeted in, half the country is smart. Very, very smart. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Morgan Barbara, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.